Well, hello, race fans. Welcome to another edition of the USF Pro Insider, episode 60. It is Thursday, May the 2nd. My name's Rob Howden. Excited to be home after what was a fantastic race at Barber Motorsports Park, a standalone only event for the drivers in USF Juniors, a Thursday-Friday program. Doubleheader races on the Friday as the USF Juniors joined the NTT IndyCar Series along with Indy Next at the Continental Tire Grand Prix of Alabama. Again, Barber Motorsports Park, fantastic venue. Drivers absolutely love it. Second event on the season for USF Juniors, having them, of course, launched the season at NOLA Motorsports Park earlier in the month. Ideal weather, to be honest. It was perfect. Low 80s on Friday, sunny with clouds, fans galore around the racetrack. Great attendance at Barber this year, and a good opportunity for those fans to see the future stars of IndyCar. The track itself, as we know, 2.3 miles. 17 turns in total, and a challenging track for sure. The undulations, the elevation changes, the high commitment parts of the racetrack, the two kind of S's on the back straightaway. Super high commitment racetrack for these young drivers. So again, diving into another edition here of the USF Pro Insider. I have a couple of guests who have joined me as well. We have interviews with both Leandro Junkos from D-Force Racing and Ava Dobson from J. Howard Driver Development. Of course, Ava involved in the incident ended race number one, the big wreck coming out of turn number three and four. And we'll talk to Ava about that. But again, just kind of diving in here for a quick race report of what happened. I'm not going to go into super depth. I got my takeaways that we'll wrap things up with as well. But just to looking at essentially overall, again, the driver to beat, bottom line, if you watch the races, you can see them, of course, on the USF Pro Championships YouTube channel. Ariel Elkin from InterMS was really the guy to beat all weekend long at Barber. Qualified on the pole position. Led from pole in the opening race, chased all race long by Exclusive Autosports Jack Jeffers, who was definitely on point throughout the weekend. The scrap, of course, for third, final position on the podium was between Bruno Ribeiro and Augusto Soto Sharipa. Ribeiro for D-Force Racing and Soto Sharipa, the other driver for InterMS. InterMS, as I said, very quick on the weekend. They were battling hard for P3. And essentially, the turning point of the race, which brought on the incident that everybody has seen on social media. After a late restart, Soto Sharipa made a good move to the inside of Ribeiro down into turn number one. Shot wide a bit, getting through the inside of the track. Went off, came back on. Side-by-side coming down through turn two, turn three. Super close, side-by-side. Ribeiro ends up on top of the curbing. Essentially got high center, I think, on the curbing and spun him around. As he's coming around, as you've everybody seen, right in the middle of the racetrack, and of course the rest of the field, this is the battle for third and fourth, right? So there's another 22 drivers or 23 drivers rolling in there. Everybody making evasive maneuvers, trying to find a way by. I think the first contact was Leonardo Scorpione, who almost snuck by Ribeiro, but his left rear getting tagged and damaged there. He's off in turn five. Diego Guillo was involved, Timothy Carroll, Aiden Potter, but as they came up the hill, Ava Dobson in the tow, two drivers side by side in front of her, I think two of her teammates, in fact, she's right there, she's low in the car, as we know, it's coming up over the rise, she can't see Ribeiro at all, and center punches him, essentially rear part of the car as he's spinning, significant damage. First and foremost, the bottom line is this, is the Tatis chassis held up beautifully. Ava sore. You'll hear that from the interview we have with her later on in the podcast here. But tons of damage. Obviously, Ribeiro's car, significant damage. Same with the car of Ava Dobson. A lot of drivers involved in the incident, but the best thing was is that everybody was able to walk away. Everybody's fine. Ava, as I said, sore. I'm sure Bruno Ribeiro's a bit sore as well from the contact. But as you'll hear for later from Ava, she's good. So past that, again, there was no way that was getting cleared up. I think there was three or four laps remaining at that point. Race was called a lap early. Ariel Elkin getting his first series win over Jack Jeffers. Soto Sharipa was able to continue. He finishes up on the podium in third. Liam McNeely from J. Howard Driver Development to won one of the races at NOLA Motorsports Park was fourth. And Evan Cooley for Exclusive Autosport, his first top five. Great run for Evan Cooley. Best finish of the year. We expect more from that young Illinois driver as well. Later, so doubleheader, as I said earlier, on Friday. So back at it in the afternoon, right after IndyCar practice, which was really cool. We rolled out right when IndyCar practice was done. A lot of people at the racetrack to watch. Once again, Ariel Elkin managed the start very well. He really managed the starts and restarts extremely well. Listened very closely to race directors and race stewards Bo Barfield and Charlie Kimball on the driver's meeting. And I talked to those guys afterwards, and they said he did exactly what he was supposed to do. So a perfect and ideal start for Elkin. Leads the opening corners. Down into turn number five for the first time. This is where things kind of dial in on Jack Jeffers. Jeffers running down the corner. Sebastian Weldon running in the third spot. Liam McNeely in fourth. Weldon makes a move down the inside, a lunge down the inside of turn five. Locked the brakes up a little bit. I think Jeffers, I talked to Jack after he saw him coming and was getting ready to do the over-under. But as he tried to roll the over-under, knowing that believing that Weldon was going to probably overshoot the corner a bit, McNeely was right there. And as he came across, a little bit of contact between, you know, Liam got into the back of Jack there. Jack looped around, tried to get going, and got high-centered up on the curbing on the inside of the corner. McNeely had damage from the contact. He was done, so there's another championship contender done. Jack Jeffers, as we said, ended up losing a lap, but was able to come back, I think, for a top 20 finish with the all the incidents that were on the racetrack. But nonetheless, for Jeffers, tough one for him. This, again, set up essentially Ariel Elkin versus Sebastian Weldon. Weldon chased Elkin all race long, couldn't find a way by. Elkin ended up scoring his second win of the weekend. Weldon on the podium in second, and once again, Augusto Soto Chiripa on the podium in third. So four podiums for Inter-MS. Leandro Juncos was fourth, D-Force Racing. A big step up for him, having been kind of mid-pack at NOLA Motorsports Park, and Max Taylor rounded out the top five. If I look at takeaways on the weekend for the drivers at the Barber Motorsports Park event, the Continental Grand Prix of Alabama, massive weekend for Inter-MS. Scored two wins, four podium finishes. They have arrived on the scene as a brand new team in the USF Juniors program. They, with two talented and mature drivers, going to battle it out for a title, I think, when we get to Portland in August. I will say this, championship tightened up significantly after Weldon's strong NOLA performances. We'll look at the championship points in a second, but yeah, things tightening up. You know, Weldon was obviously coming in hoping to continue that streak he had rolling. He rolled that momentum into Barber. Wasn't quite there. He was good. Again, you know, was there a little bit on kind of top five on race one and race two, as we know, was in the fight. The major wreck, of course, showed the strength of the Tatis chassis and, again, the halo as well, which came to the rescue for sure. If you've seen the in-car from Ava Dobson, her left front tire and wheel assembly straight up in the air and made contact with the left side of the halo. So had that halo not been there, I think the damage would have been worse and it could have been nasty. So, again, the halo coming to the rescue. And last but not least, we don't talk about it in the quick race report, but I think one of the most impressive drivers on the weekend was probably Teddy Musella from Zanella Racing. Rookie. He had won a couple of the races in F4. I'm not sure if he's going to run the full F4 championship, but he was coming over to run with Zanella. A pair of top fives for Teddy as he learned a new car, new track, was learning a ton throughout the weekend and throughout, obviously, the day on Friday with a couple of races. So Musella with a couple of top tens, in my opinion, very, very impressive. Provisional points championship battle here. After five of the 16 races, so very early, still 11 races to come, VIR in June, the next event. Sebastian Weldon leads with 130 points, but now only by 7 over Ariel Elkin, who had a pretty decent runs at NOLA. Liam McNeely, despite the DNF in race number 2 at Barber, still right there, 101 points. Max Taylor with 92. And then you got a couple drivers very close, 5th and 6th. Soto Chiripa with 78, Jack Jeffers with 74. Jeffers and Soto Chiripa will need to get on top of the box here pretty soon to try to get some points. Leandro Juncos up into 7th. Aiden Ingrata 8th, Evan Cooley 9th, and Joao Vergara. Cooley and Vergara tied with 47 points. So, yeah, you know, there's really four drivers have pulled away right now, but again, super early. Weldon, Elkin, McNeely, and Taylor, although Taylor's still 38 points behind Weldon. That's a full race, but Elkin and McNeely right in there as well. Three different teams as well up front, which I like. VRD for Weldon, Inter-MS for Elkin, and then Jay Howard Driver Development for Liam McNeely. So that's your championship points. A quick update there. On to my first interview of the show, and it's with D-Force Racing's Leandro Juncos, and just a really great story. If you saw some of the stuff on the broadcast, we'll talk a bit about it. Guy focused on soccer for 14 years of his life. He was, you know, focused on potentially becoming a professional soccer player, and that was the life. But then, you know, that family business was there, right? You know, Juncos Racing has been around for almost a couple of decades now, and the family business drew him in, and he's focusing on becoming a driver now, but he's doing double duty because he's actually on the pit box as well for Juncos Hollinger Racing. So The idea is to become a driver or a professional race car driver. The bottom line is if he doesn't get there, he can always be on the box. He can always get in the engineering side, team ownership side with his dad. But yeah, I'll tell you, fantastic interview with Leandro Juncos. We'll get to that in a second. Again, impressive ending for him at Barber. I mentioned before, seventh and then a fourth, top five, while doing double duty. Again, during the second race, he was literally on the pit box with Juncos Hollinger for IndyCar practice, then jumped behind the wheel of his D-Force Racing Tatis to run in the event. So really super impressive. And again, let's do that now. Let's go to my interview. Fantastic chat that I had earlier this week with Leandro Juncos. Well, here we are, fresh off a weekend at Barber Motorsports Park and being joined here on the show by Leandro Juncos, driver for D-Force Racing, coming off a fantastic weekend in Alabama. Leandro, thank you so much for taking the time to chat.
Hey, Rob. Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, we'll get to Barber. We'll talk about the opening round in NOLA as well. But first and foremost, let's just talk about how you got here. Let's put it that way, because 18 years of age, you're now living in Carmel, Indiana. The Juncos name, obviously, when it comes to the USF Pro Championships or Road to Indy back then, even before that, of course, into the Star Mazda Championship, deeply ingrained into junior formula open wheel racing here in North America. Let's talk about you did some karting when you were really young, but you went and played soccer instead. What was the reason for you going to play soccer?
Yeah, so I obviously, you know, I was pretty much born in a race team. When I was like 2-3 years old, you know, inside the car, you know, watching debriefs with the drivers. So it's something I always had. Yep. But obviously, I started also soccer very young. And I, you know, started playing and I was quite good. And, you know, karting, I had the chance to do some races when I was around 9-10 years old, okay. Which were pretty good. But obviously, you know, economically with the racing team, you know, we just couldn't do both at the same time. So I understood that from a young age. So I just pursued soccer from there on and got to live, you know, in a couple of different countries, you know, Brazil, Argentina, Spain, to, you know, just exploring opportunities in soccer. And the last 2 years I was living in Argentina, got to a pretty high level, you know, training with the professional team, you know, a top division and everything. Yeah. And I think it got to a point where I had to, you know, decide 100% I was going to stick to it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it was going to be a professional contract and everything. So I had to really make a decision. And I think, you know, two big factors, obviously. It's really difficult to live, you know, in like in Argentina, for example, those types of countries compared to here. And also, you know, just missing the track, you know, missing the team and, you know, missing the 500 for the first time in my life. You know, I went to the 500 mm-hmm. since I've been 2 years old every year. Mm-hmm. So that really played a big factor for me. So I decided, you know what, I'd rather, you know, take an opportunity back here in racing and be, you know, even just more happy, you know, about it. And I think it paid off. You know, I got the opportunity to, you know, then step in with the team and, you know, everything started going pretty quick. And I went from playing soccer to a year later, you know, racing USF Juniors.
It's so interesting, right? When you have two loves like that, where you're kind of balancing back and forth. I love this sport of soccer, football, but there's also this family heritage and this love. Listen, everybody knows what it's like to be at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. You mentioned the 500, of course, Juncos racing with one of the coolest stories ever with Kyle Kaiser making the 500. So you have that deep connection to the speedway as well and to the sport. So I can understand the battle back and forth. So like you said, you make the move. You're like, okay, I'm gonna stop playing soccer. I got the family up there, you know, with the family team up in Indianapolis. I want to go racing. So how do you jump in? You know, you did a bit of karting, like you said. Did you end up doing a racing school or did you just dive in to getting some testing done? And first and foremost, how did you connect with D-Force Racing? How did that come to be?
So, yeah, when I came back, I actually, from Argentina, landed straight into the Mid-Ohio IndyCar weekend, you okay. know, straight into the team, you know, already working there. So
yep.
it was like, you know, just right in. And then after, you know, working with the team, I started talking, you know, finding out about different, you know, series or schools or testing I could do. And then I know for a long time, Gustavo Yacaman,
yep.
you know, I have a great relationship with him. And he told me, you know, about the academy that they do testing and stuff. So I'm like, you know, I thought it was a good, you know, interesting opportunity. I got to test with InterMS and the F4 car in Homestead. You know, they gave me a great opportunity to go and test, you know, for the first time, you know, a formula. And it actually, you know, without any preparation, just pretty much sim racing, it actually went pretty good. From there, you know, Gustavo was there and, you know, he talked to me, you know, here are a couple options for a barber test. And, you know, I obviously barbers, I love the track. It's an amazing facility. So I'm like, oh, we have to do it. And, you know, got the opportunity, spoke with D-Force, obviously David, I know him. He knows me when I was like 3 years old, pretty much. Yeah. So that was pretty easy to like, you know, yeah, well, we can arrange something. And then with my luck, obviously everything's very difficult. The first day was in rain. So I had no idea. I've never been in the rain, never at the track, never at the car. And we went out and I think we were P1 or P2 by a 10th. So
wow. Like,
okay, that's a pretty good start.
We'll take it.
And, yeah. And then just from there on, the test was very positive, I think. It was super, you know, gelling with the team. They were super helpful, super understanding of my situation. But it was also a bit weird because normally, you know, I even know this from seeing from the outside, that normally when jars begin, it's not really normal to be that quick straight away.
Of course.
So it's a bit of a challenge to, you know, not, you know, we can skip a couple steps, but not get too ahead of ourselves. Because I still need to learn, you know, and I think that's what I saw in New Orleans, you know, although we had good pace, you know, certain things that I just never experienced really cost me in that race. And I just, you know, at some point I got to learn, you know, I can't just already begin knowing everything. So,
yeah, you know, even with this deep lineage with your team and just being at the racetrack, like, as you had said, you spent a lot of time at the racetrack and you've been in debriefs. It's still learning the racecraft. It's still being immersed in it, right? You can be part of it, but until you're in that cockpit in the heat of battle, there's just things that you don't really know. And I will say, strong out of the gate, as you had said, and we will come back to the fact that, because I know you mentioned that you came back and straight started working with Hunkos Hollinger Racing. So you went right into working with your dad's team. So you're again there. So we're going to talk about that kind of dual purpose, dual double duty thing you're doing here throughout the season, and we'll, I'm sure, do moving forward. Let's go into the racing right now, because there's a couple things I want to touch on, but let's go right into the racing itself. So you do the off-season testing with Barber. You have with D-Force Racing. You have the issue, like the challenge, as you said, at Barber Motorsports Park. You do a bunch of testing. Then you roll into the start of the season. Let's say we go to NOLA Motorsports Park, and just give me what you were feeling when you rolled into that weekend saying, man, you know, after all the stuff I've done, the little racing I did when I was younger, the focus I used to have on football, played soccer, now I'm racing. What was that first weekend like?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's pretty wild, you know, because like from that race, you know, 6 months before that, I was, you know, kicking a ball in Argentina. So yeah. it's such a huge, you know, change.
It is.
And I think everything happened so quickly, especially working with the team, with Junko's, you know, working so much. It kind of all went by really fast. So I didn't really notice it. But definitely come race day, it was like, you know, I felt very prepared. I feel like I'd done everything I could with the little experience I had. Mm-hmm. But still, you know, it's from so many years watching, you know, from the outside. One thing's watching, and then one thing's, you know, actually starting the race, being side by side. It's a lot, you know. I had a lot of fun still, but it was very challenging. And I think I did quite good for the little experience. But obviously I always try to improve. And I think all that I learned in that race, I try to apply it in Barber. And I think it was, you know, a big step up from one week to the other.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, everything's learning, right? You did extremely well. You did the first thing I always tell any young driver, you drove it back to the paddock after all three races, right? That's kind of the key. You finished the top 15 in all three races as well, in a 26 car field, 12th, 12th and 14th, I believe were the results of the three races. What was the biggest thing you thought you learned? Let's go with that. Like, obviously you finish this first weekend, you debrief when it's all said and done, right? The week afterwards, you're like, man, okay, I'm taking this all in. What was the biggest thing you took away, you think, from that first weekend?
I think the main thing is maximizing what I have. I think I come with an expectation where I always, you know, especially in testing, it gives you a false feeling because you put, you know, like two or three sets of new tires. So at the end of the day, you already have the car where you want it. So it's always almost not perfect, but an ideal situation.
Yep.
And, you know, qualifying, the first day I qualified seventh, which was pretty good. And the car was good. Then the second day, me and as a team, I think we just missed it a bit. And I had the expectation, you know, second day, second set of tires is going to be, you know, perfect. And it wasn't. And when it wasn't, you know, I overdrove, I made mistakes, and ended up costing me where I qualified, you know, 16th. I was like, oh, you know, it's if I just would have, you know, take a step back and just, you know, settled in what I have, I might have started, you know, not pole, but maybe, you know, 8th or 9th, and that would have been better. And I tried to apply that in Barber, and, you know, even starting 9th or starting 5th, I, you know, I moved up both the races with good pace. So just really, you know, taking a step back and just taking, you know, grabbing what I have and not trying to overdo it, because especially in this series, you know, it's so tight, you know, we're like a 10th of a second every lap. So there's not much you can do, and just be consistent, no mistakes. And I think that's the biggest learning I did.
It's interesting to hear you kind of detail it like that. And so I could almost hear the, you know, the experience you're having on the Hokos Hollinger box and IndyCar whatever you've done potentially with the Indy Next side is the simple fact that you're like, you're understanding the nuances of the sport. Like we're not talking about experience. You literally, it seems to me like the improvement you had moving from Knoll to Barber. And as you said, incredibly good runs, 7th in the opening race. I think even better. Again, you were one of my stars of the race, definitely in race number 2, coming home to P4. But it seems like it's more of a mental thing. It feels like you were more mentally prepared, not just the track side or being behind the wheel, but it's you were just mentally prepared to kind of deal with some of the situations on the racetrack. Does that sound like I'm kind of on the right line?
No, 100%. I mean, it's all mental, you know? The thing is, in soccer, for example, it's also very mental, but you have teammates to rely on. If you're off a little bit, you know, the team can help you or a teammate. And here it's, you know, you're 100% on your own. Like every moment, like the entire race, in like 20 laps, you're always in control and it's all on you. So it's very much more stressful mentally, much more demanding. And I think I just try to, you know, be more relaxed and be more concentrated on what I can do in my control. And I think, you know, that's why we got a good result.
Yeah, I think you're going to be happy moving to the next event at VIR. Obviously, very impressive here at Barber. Let's talk a little bit about, before we move into another topic I have, about the athleticism of football, soccer, and racing. What's the connection? But you're obviously going to roll in good shape, right? That's one of the things you have to be. You have to be in good shape, because if you get tired in a race, you start to lose that mental focus. Do you feel that all the work you did over the so many years in football was allowed you to turn around and then really kind of hit the ground running physically to drive a race car?
Well, I honestly thought the same thing, and I was wrong.
Oh, really?
Because physically, especially in testing, I was extremely tired. Like, I had pains in my body. I think the muscles you work and you have to develop in racing are completely different to soccer. Like my shoulders, my neck, my back is something I never really had to, like, you know, hold my whole body trying to go, you know, 100 miles an hour the opposite way that I'm going, you know. That helps, like, feeling develop. You know, I remember the Barber test at the end of the day. I'm like, I was finished. You know, I couldn't go one more lap. I came in, I'm just dead. And I'm like, there's no way, you know. And I just, you know, now I started in pit fit. And, yeah, I mean, I'm honestly, like, in shock with how much the drivers have to train, like, coming from soccer in the professional level, I know how hard they had to train and how hard we trained. And I would say the drivers, you know, in IndyCar, when we're seeing, you know, Agustin, Rossi, they train more than soccer. Like, I was in disbelief, like, how hard and how demanding it really is. So I really focused on that from Nola to Barber, really, you know, in the gym and trying to physically be better than where I was. And I think I was, you know, end of the second day, and I was, you know, I was fresh, you know, I always felt great. So
that is that's tremendous insight. I love that. Thank you for that. So, okay, now let's move to, you mentioned it beforehand and we talked about it a bit. You're obviously working with Hunkos Hollinger Racing in IndyCar. You're on the box, you're gathering data for Agustin Canapino's program. Fill me in on exactly what you're doing for the team. Let's start with that. So and you did it even on the weekend. I got a shot I'm gonna send over to you because I was down on pit lane at one point during practice, first IndyCar practice. You're there with your dad on the box. We're literally an hour away from you rolling out for race number 2. So you were on the box. What exactly are you doing now for the team in IndyCar?
Yeah, so in for example, before the race, you know, all that is practice, qualifying, warm up, anything driver related, comparisons, for example, you know, sector times or data against him, Roman, seeing where the differences are, where we need to improve, where the car, you know, I can see different statistics of guys, you know, in certain turns on the high speed, low speed, and trying to see where we're lacking. So we approach the changes to the car and changes to his driving to optimize, you know, the beat. But for example, you know, he might feel uncomfortable in turn 9 and 10, but I can see that in turn 9 and 10, we're one of the quickest cars. And 5, where he's comfortable, we're really slow. So we need to target, you know, that's just trying to another, you know, another set of eyes trying to really move forward in a tight, you know, weekend. And then in the race, alongside with the two engineers, you know, just the race strategy, just trying to see how we can optimize that. And, you know, I think this weekend, for example, you know, we switched from a two stop to a three stop, and that's discussions we have between us. And, you know, I think it worked. Obviously, we have made some mistakes in the race, but, you know, we're just trying to really move forward and maximize everything in the car and the driving, the strategy. That's what I try to help, you know, alongside the engineer.
Yeah, well, this begs the question, obviously, if you're, you know, leveraging your analytical mind like that, how does that translate? And I'm sure it would positively. How does that translate into the D-Force data room when you're sitting down? Because you honestly have to have a feel for kind of what's going on with your own team as well, your own team and your own racing as well. I have to think that's a huge positive for you.
Yeah, I think being able to see it from the outside, and also driving, it gives me like more of an idea of what's going on. So, for example, let's say I don't have data or an onboard. I already have an understanding of what the car is, where we need to improve, without looking at anything. You know, we had, you know, problems with the telemetry and the data with, you know, this weekend, and just with our engine, my engineer, you know, we just on pure feedback and, you know, just trusting that we're gonna do the right thing, and we ended up being one of the quickest cars. So I think that just gives me more of understanding and makes everything easier. I don't have to, you know, spend so much time looking at stuff. It just makes everything, you know, quicker, and we can try more things at a faster pace.
Obviously, a strong run to start the season off, Leandro. Where do you now? You know, as we look to, down the line to the next races, is there a couple of races you're super excited about getting to? You know what I mean?
Definitely Mid-Ohio. I think Mid-Ohio is going to be similar to Barber. I think it's a, you know, it's a very difficult track, but I think it's one, I think it's more qualifying based. You know, you have to really maximize the pace. It's hard to overtake. So I think, you know, that's another track I think we can really excel at and, you know, fight at the front.
If I had told you at the start of the season that a couple of weekends into your first year racing a car, you'd be seventh place in points, what would you have said?
Well, personally, I would be, you know, pretty disappointed because always you always want to win. But I think realistically, it's not bad, especially with how, you know, difficult the NOLA weekend was. I think to be seventh now is quite good. I think we can make a lot of progress. But yeah, pretty happy with that, to be honest.
So what's the ultimate goal? And is it the NTT IndyCar Series? Do you want to be a professional race car driver? If you can't do that, you'll be on the box. Or what's the key? It's because you're doing the stuff with the team, right? You're working on the box. You're part of the data team. Is that a potential fallback? I hate to use the word fallback. Is that like the other thing, or is it like I'm gonna be a professional race car driver? That's why I'm doing this.
Oh, I mean, I'm convinced I'm going to be, you know, a professional race car driver and race IndyCar, you know, that's the mentality and that's the goal. Obviously, I know, you know, it's obviously very difficult to get to IndyCar. You know, I know from soccer, you know, so many players, millions and millions of players, and only, you know, maybe 10 get to be professional. So I know the percentage of making it is very short. But yeah, I'm, you know, 100% convinced I can make it. I'm trying to do everything possible to do it. But obviously, you know, the data and the team, you know, it's obviously makes it, you know, have a good second option, which not many have, but
Yeah, very
obviously.
true. Very true. Any more pressure having that Juncos name in the paddock?
No, not at all. I get asked that a lot, but I think no, I don't really feel the pressure ever. I think, you know, so many years now in at least in soccer being at such a high level and
Yeah,
so
true.
demanding every week in, week out, where I think, you know, in the racing just I have so much confidence in my preparation, what I do, that I don't really think in that stuff. So no, not really.
I love it. All right, let's move forward. Look to the next race for you guys. When you look at the schedule, you talked about the fact that you're looking at Mid-Ohio being one of the ones you're kind of looking forward to is here. We have a test coming up mid-May at Mid-Ohio. From there, we go to VIR on the June 14th to 16th weekend. Just before we wrap up here, what are your thoughts on VIR?
It seems pretty fun. I was looking at the races from last year and so many overtakes, you know, three wide going to turn one. Like, it seems like it's going to be, you know, with 26 plus cars, it's going to be intense. Going to be one of those you need to survive mainly.
Leandro, thank you so much, man. I appreciate it. Great opportunity to get a chance to chat with you. A fantastic story, and I look forward to following you, of course, throughout the season. I'd love to see that first win come. We know that D-Force Racing can get it done. They won the championship last year. I will say that the competition this year is probably double that it was in 2023. 2024, stellar, with 27 cars on track at Barber Motorsports Park. But looking forward to watching you for the rest of the season. And, man, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Rob. It was a pleasure to be on.
Yeah, as I said, a fantastic interview with Leandro Juncos, and you just listen to his focus, the maturity in the voice. This is a guy who's really focused on getting the right stuff done, and I think we're going to see a lot from him. I think there's going to be podiums. I think there could be race wins before the end of the season. We know D-Force, defending USF Juniors champion, they know how to get it done. They did last year with Nicholas Giafone. We'll see how long it takes for one of their drivers, maybe Leandro Juncos, to break into victory lane here this year. Still 11 races to go, as I had said. Did two interviews earlier this week, one with Leandro and another with Ava Dobson, the young lady out of Wisconsin, the only female driver we have this year in the USF Pro Championships presented by Continental Tire. And again, she's kind of getting up to speed, faster and faster every race we get to. That big shunt that they had at Barber, though, you're going to hear from this interview. It's got her already ready to get back on the racetrack. It's a fantastic interview. It's the stuff we got from Ava and what we were able to discuss. Really super impressed. And again, you think about the hard contact that she had there, how it could have maybe affected some other drivers. It's only, I think, proven to really make her dig in even deeper. It's just, she sounds even more committed to getting the job done and doing what she needs to do. So super impressed. So here we go. Another interview here for this edition of the podcast, USF Pro Insider. I had a chance to sit down and chat with Ava Dobson. Well, Ava Dobson joining me in the studio now. Ava, thank you so much for taking time out of a Tuesday evening. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, you know, we're going to dive into who you are, you know, how you got in the sport. First and foremost, let's talk, because we're going to dive deeper into the Barber incident later in the interview here. How are you right now? Big wreck, as we know. How you feeling a couple of days down? I know you and I talked on the weekend, you were still pretty sore.
Yeah, I am pretty sore. I'm not going to lie to you, but I've been having some headaches. So I think we're going to go get checked out for a concussion because we're not sure, but it also might just be from my whiplash that I got. But
fair enough. Yeah.
I am pretty sore and I'm still pretty tired from it. I haven't been able to work out. So I hope I feel better.
You want to get back in the gym, don't you?
Yeah, I've been anxious.
I love it. That's good. Hey, listen, let's dive in like we normally do to the people I talk to, the racers here on the podcast, because, you know, we want to find out who you are, you know, where you come from. You're a Wisconsin girl. You started in karting. Yep. So that means, no one means the Badger Kart Club. So did you start at Badger? Is that where you first got going?
Yeah, that's where I was started in Micro Swift with Franklin Motorsports. And my dad got me into it when I was younger, and I was like 7 years old. And it was pretty cold out when I first started. It was like April or like March. And I can just remember when I was 7 years old and I was starting at Badger and I sucked.
I sucked. Listen to you. I think we all sucked when we first started. Let's be real. How did you get into it? Did your dad like watching racing? Was he a racer himself?
My dad did do some like IMSA Cup car stuff or whatever he did. I'm not really sure, to be honest with you, but we did some like indoor karting thing. And we met some people there and they were like, oh, you should get Ava into the go-karting stuff. Like, I think she'd really like it. So we got into it. We met Jamie. We met George, and it just kind of went on from there, honestly.
If you're not familiar with karting, that is Jamie Siraki and his dad, George Siraki, at Franklin Motorsports. Been around for many, many years, a father and son duo that now run one of the big shops in the sport. So you get going. You said you're a Micro Swift driver. You roll through karting like many people do. You run bigger races. You work your way up to regionals and nationals. What was kind of the biggest level of national racing that you did?
So we did like USPKS, of course, and then SCUSA, where we would race with like those big races at like Vegas and the SCUSA Tour or whatever. And I got to race with a lot of people because I did the K junior field when I started getting a little older. And the fields were like, I remember in Vegas, it was like 100 people were in it. And it was just crazy of how many people would like I would race against. And I'm just like, oh my gosh.
So when was did the concept come? Hey, you know what? We want to make the transition. You're 15 years of age now. You started back in essentially 2023 last year, early last year. I know you did the Academy Series. You and I talked about you doing the F4 development program. But what was the mindset with you talking to your dad about, hey, listen, let's make the move into cars right now. What kind of made that the last year the right time to move?
So we actually did get reached out by Jay to join and a sponsorship with Jay. So that's kind of how he found us. And honestly, I didn't think at that time I was ready because I had just moved with a different team in karting and I started doing well and I started progressing a lot. So when Jay reached out to me, my dad was a little hesitant because he didn't know if like I was 100% ready, and I told him that like I think it's time, and like because you got to start young, you know,
You do.
because all the USF junior drivers, I mean, they're young, the F4 drivers were young, but yeah, we were reached out and we just kind of said yes.
So then listen, whatever it is, whatever the way you get in, you're going to make the decision to go car racing. You did the developmental series, and then you made your debut in USF Juniors, near the end of the season at Road America. And right out of the gate, pretty strong. You end up finishing just outside the top 10 of those races, but you were inside the top 10 and showed good speed. Looking back, are you pretty happy with how you did that very first weekend at Road America? And was it a daunting experience?
It was. I really loved Road America that weekend, and it was kind of like one of my, I think it was like my second time in the USF Junior car, like the third time. So I had been testing a little bit prior to that, and obviously the F4, I just started getting into the racing with F4. So I haven't really done, and I obviously haven't done a rolling start by that point, but it was so different. It was really exciting, and the racing was so good, and obviously Road America is my home track, so I have so many laps there on like the sim and stuff. And we did do a test there earlier, and I think we did go there for a race. So it was I just kind of knew the track, and I just really liked racing there with USF.
It set up well for a debut, right? Because you tested there, you'd raced there already. So it was kind of like you were in the groove already to go in and take that one more step.
Yeah, 100%.
So we come into this year, you do the Academy Winter Series again, this time with the full Jay Howard Driver Development team, the seven car team you guys have. We'll ask about that in a second. Pretty good run down in Florida in the Academy Winter Series. You end up with a fifth in Sebring in what was a tough 16 car field. You're settling in for your first year of USF Juniors. We'll talk a little bit about your debut on the year at NOLA Motorsports Park. But before we do, I want to ask a little bit about the Jay Howard team atmosphere. Well, let's talk a little bit about Jay first. When you came and ran Road America last year, if you recall, I came and joined you guys for the track walk. And Jay's track walks are fantastic. I was so excited after that track walk that I wanted to race with you guys because the way he kind of grabbed every little bit of the track tells you where he really wanted you to be. It seems to be like Jay, he just provides a lot for you drivers in terms of the experience he's had.
Yeah, he definitely gives so much detail and like honestly like bit by bit, and I think that's extremely important when you're trying to find those like little tenths, and it's just anything is like time. So I think when he does go into detail like that, I think it's super beneficial when you're already prior like already aware of it prior to going out on track. And I just think overall it's just 100% beneficial the way he does it.
And again, you guys are diving in, right? It's a steep learning curve for you guys and girls driving into this program, getting into juniors, kind of get a feel for everything. So, speaking of guys and girls, let's talk about that trailer that you have to deal with. You've got essentially, I watch you guys, so you guys have a good time together. You got like six brothers there. You got Liam, Aiden, G3, Timothy, Hudson, and Aiden. Six other guys under the tent with you, plus the drivers in USF 2000, like Evagoras and Frankie Mossman up in Pro. What's it like having all these hooligans around you the whole time?
It's definitely a lot of different personalities all
It is.
together.
Yeah.
And obviously, there's so many of us, so sometimes we do get in disagreements and whatever, but it's just like having like a huge family. It's like a family reunion, like every race, to be honest. Yep. So it's like one big team. I don't even know how many drivers there are, but like 7 junior drivers. It can be a lot sometimes, especially when the practices are crunched and we all have to like watch video and we're just like struggling. But it is beneficial because you get all the data, and like obviously Liam is up top and he's doing very well.
Yep.
And then you get people like Eva Gorris and Michael Costello who are racing in 2000. So you kind of have like a look ahead of what to come. And then obviously Frankie's in pro. So it's a really nice team. I really love it.
Do you feel like you got the good synchronicity with your drivers? You mentioned Liam McNeely. Obviously, he wasn't with you guys last year, either in F4 or in the USF Juniors program. But he's come over with a wealth of experience from Europe. Have you guys connected pretty good with him out of the gate?
Yeah, he is a really nice kid. And obviously, he was fast right out of the gate. We did some testing with him a little bit prior, and he was obviously really fast. So I just... honestly, like when we're watching video with him, like we always ask him questions and stuff, and he's very knowledgeable what he talks about. He knows a lot. So he really is a great teammate to have.
I love it. Getting a chance to talk with Ava Dobson here, USF Juniors driver for J. Howard Driver Development. Let's go to NOLA, Ava. Obviously off-season testing, some good results in the Academy Winter Series, solid in the spring training. You come in fired up and ready to go. Overall, listen, 27 drivers in the field, or 26. You end up 18th in the first race, 15th in the second race. You weren't able to start the third race with an issue. Overall, how do you look back at NOLA? Are you happy with the way NOLA went?
I'm pretty happy with the way NOLA went. Qualifying didn't go the way we expected it to. And honestly, qualifying is just not my strong suit. I really don't know why. I've been trying everything I can.
Ava, I'm with you on that. I'm horrible at qualifying. I don't know why.
I'm so bad at it. I don't know why. Like, I try so hard. It just never works out.
But the same way.
The racing, I love racing. Like, passing people is just, like, my favorite thing in the whole world. So, like, ever since karting, I would start, like, last and just work my way up. Like, it was just so fun. So, I find so much enjoyment in that. And
I'm with you. Yep.
The racing's pretty solid in junior. There's so many drivers, so it is competitive. And obviously, everyone's pretty quick. Like, there's not a huge gap. I think it's just, like, a second or two, honestly. Yeah. Yeah. So it's all pretty close together, and it's hard racing. So
you mentioned qualifying. So that begs the question, because this is something I would ask any young driver in their first year. So, you had some solid results at NOLA. We know you had some good results before last year, that one-off at Road America. What's the one thing you're focused on, or maybe you and Jay are focused on working with you? I know qualifying is a skill. You mentioned that already. You'd like to get better at that. But is there other parts of racing, or is it qualifying? Is there other stuff that really you're focused on trying to get better at, whether it's braking or rolling more corner speed?
So another thing I've actually been trying to work on is with high-speed corners. Yep. I'm still building confidence in the car. And I've been improving a lot ever since NOLA, and in Barber is obviously a hard track. So that is another thing I've been working on for a while now. And obviously the physical strength that I have a disadvantage of when it comes to being a girl.
Yep.
So I've been working on that ever since November. I've been doing the boxing.
I want to bring that in too. doing a little boxing. I think that's fantastic. Oh my God. Do you love it?
I love it. It's so fun. Like, the environment, the people, the workout, it's amazing. I think that
doing that would make you'd be just getting stronger and stronger and stronger.
Oh my gosh, yes, for really? Sure.
And none of your guys will mess around with you either. I like that too.
Yeah, they're scared of me.
They're scared of me. I love it. They should be scared of you. All right, so let's hit the elephant in the room. Let's go to Barber Motorsports Park. Obviously, a big deal on the weekend, not only was a nasty wreck, scary for everybody in the paddock, yourself, your family. Social media grabbed a hold of it. People were, blown away. Big props to Tatis for building a race car that you were able to walk away from. But again, so let's before we jump into that, Thursday, you roll to NOLA. You come to Barber on Thursday. A lot of track time. It wasn't the races on Friday, but how did you go on Thursday? Were you pretty happy with Thursday on a tough racetrack?
I was, actually. I felt like I was keeping up pace pretty well with my teammates and obviously taking away all the things I needed to learn on track and just like trying to be the best I can right out of the gate instead of like just waiting and like hanging out or whatever. So I was just trying to go hard right out of the gate and like take as much as away I can on Thursday to provide it on Friday.
And you mentioned working on the high speed corners, and listen, turn five to nine at NOLA, unbelievably high speed. You're like rolling so much speed through those corners. Mm-hmm. Same thing for Barber. Turn one is super fast, right?
Yeah.
All the way the back, just the entire back part of the racetrack is unbelievably fast. So I would assume that was one of those places, this track, where you kind of had to incrementally creep up on how much speed you were carrying through the corners.
For sure. I was definitely working on that a lot. That's where the time was really.
Yep.
Because I am pretty good in the low speed. Like, that's just something I was naturally good at ever since I started cars.
Yep.
And it was just the high speed that I was working on. But I felt like I was progressively getting so much better throughout the weekend and pushing my limits as much as I can and trying to feel the confidence in the car and knowing it's going to, like, save itself with the grip. Yep. So it was really a up and down weekend.
Yeah, the thing is, you I can hear it in your voice. You have an understanding of what the car is going to give you that what it needs, right? You need to trust it, but it's hard to trust it at 120 miles an hour. And as the season goes on, everywhere we go, you're going to get a little better. You're going to do VIR, and then remember, we're going to end up getting back to Road America again, a mm-hmm. track where you know by that time you get to Road America, you're probably going to have that confidence you're looking for.
Yep, 100%.
All right, so let's talk about the wreck. Race one, we're getting to the last, handful of laps, drivers battling up in front of you. One ends up going off the tracks, rolls back on in front. And the bottom line is, and listen, there's countless videos you can see online. So many racers have gone through this. I think we all have as carters as well. You're in a train, you're lined up. You're sitting super low in the car. You're not very tall. So you're sitting low in the car. You're coming over a rise of a hill with two drivers in front of you that split, and all of a sudden there's a car in front of you. You end up luckily not center punching it because it would have hit you harder for you and harder for Bruno Ribeiro, who was the driver hit. No time for reaction whatsoever. It must have. Do you even remember it that much? Like, do you remember it all completely?
I do actually remember it. I'm not gonna lie. Okay. That same night I had a dream about it, and I kind of like woke up from my sleep, so I had a little PTSD moment or something. I watched the video countless times, so I like remember what happened. Yep. And I can tell you what happened now, but I remember like that night I couldn't really remember much.
Okay.
And it's just like a way like your body like tries to get rid of like the moment that happened because it was scary and stuff.
Understood. Yeah,
but no, I definitely do remember it like 100% now.
So, obviously, listen, you and I talked when I got back and saw you there. The Tatis tub held strong, which is fantastic. We shout out again to Tatis for building a good car. I know you posted that on your social media as well.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the question. Are you ready to get back into the seat right now? Were you immediately afterwards? You know what I mean? Like, have you got to the point where, man, that PTSD to a certain extent is gone away? I'm ready to get back on the track? Or do you need a couple more days to process it all still?
I actually did take this differently than a lot of people thought I would. My parents thought I would be like done with it and stuff.
Wow.
But I was just shaken up for sure. It was just like, it was like really crazy. And obviously when it first happened, I was in a lot of pain.
Yeah.
Also, so I was going through a lot of emotions in one day, and not being able to race obviously was like the end of the world for me.
Of course, you didn't get to race two. That was the biggest pain, right?
Yeah, it's so hurtful, especially because I missed race three in NOLA.
Yep.
So I was just so eager to just go back out. But the way I took this wreck was the car saved me. It saved my life. It saved everything, honestly. And now that it happened, I feel like I can trust the car more.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like telling my dad when I was on the golf cart going back, and I was like crying. I was like, I wish I could go back out. And he was like, Ava, are you crazy? Like, yeah, a little bit, but like
a little bit. Yeah,
a little bit. I'm not gonna lie.
Well, that's good though. That you really listen. I guess as a professional athlete, whether it's an injury that you have or a setback or maybe not making the cut on a team, that's when you're up against it, right? That's when you find out whether or not you really want to do it. You know,
yep.
I talk to kids all the time that all they want to be is a race car driver, and there's your parents thinking you had this big wreck, and this is it. She's just gonna say no, I don't want to do it again.
But literally, if somebody would have gave you the keys to another car for race two, you probably would have climbed. You would have been sore, but you probably 100%. Would have climbed. You would have raced again.
I would have. I 100% would have. If they had another car, I would have been like, all right, we're fixing it. We're going.
Let's go. Well, good ready. For you. I love that. So listen, you're sore right now still. What was, you said the head, but were any of your extremities? Did you bang your knees around? I know that happens sometimes within the cockpit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When it first initially happened, like when I first hit them, I can just remember feeling this huge pain in my chest. And then like, kind of like when I spun around, I could feel it throughout my whole body. And then I got extremely dizzy after, when I was sitting in my car, like I couldn't get out. And I was telling them, I was like, you guys have to help me out. Like, I can't get out. And and obviously that night I was pretty sore. And ever since then, I've been pretty sore. Like my back, I got whiplash on the right side of my neck. It's all the way down to my back.
Ugh. Well, you told me, Ava, that when you had enough time when you saw it to take your hands off the wheel. And then literally you were back on the wheel when got thrust forward when you hit. You said you got right back into the wheel again. So, good for you on the reaction time to put your hands off the wheel, for sure.
Yeah, that's why I do the reaction stuff. Like, people don't think it means a lot, but, like, my dad's taught me that, right? Like, to take your hands off the wheel, put it to your chest. And something I've naturally been doing ever since karting, if I were to, like, go towards a wall or if I'm going to hit someone, like, if I 100% know I'm going to hit the wall or go someone or into someone like I did with Bruno, I just like pull my legs back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of glad I did that because like I saw some comments on Instagram. They were like, someone lost their legs due to that same crash. And I was like, okay, like I'm kind of glad I did that. Like, it's just like a natural reaction.
Of course, yeah.
When it first happens, I kind of just tense up and like curl into like a ball almost. Like it's just like a natural reaction ever since I started cars.
Yep.
But yeah, because when the car stopped and I kind of opened my eyes again, I was like, oh shoot. Like I could see like the panel was gone, the nose, everything was gone in front. And I was like, I was like freaking out. I was like, oh, my legs are still there. I can feel them. I'm okay.
That's like, a big thing. That was good for sure. So, listen, they always say, you know, when you fall off, you got to get back up on the horse. So, looking at your schedule forward, do you have a test session you guys have lined up that you're maybe eyeing on, saying this is my chance to get back in the car? You know, you have VIR coming in June. Is that kind of the point that you're looking forward to? What's the next thing that's going to keep you focused forward, keep you in the gym and keep you stretching and get yourself back to 100%?
Yeah, I'm definitely looking towards, I think we have a Mid-Ohio test in May.
Okay.
I think
you're right. Yep.
And yeah, I'm just like really eager to get back in because I know I'm going to be okay. And I know everything's going to be okay because it didn't end that day, right? I'm still here and I'm still going. And I'm just like eager to get back in because like I just want to keep racing. And
that's it. Yeah.
You know, I know what I want to do and like what I need to do to get to that point. And obviously I like Mid-Ohio. I like every track, but Mid-Ohio was a good track for me. So I am just, I'm eager to get back there.
You and I talked about this before the show, a little bit on Instagram here, because I went look at your bio and you said one of the guys you'd love to meet was David Goggins.
Mm-hmm.
And I know if anybody's out there who's read his books, Can't Hurt Me or Never Finished, David Goggins, a former Marine, shouldn't have made it as a Marine, broken legs, you know, all the stuff he went through to do what he did. But again, his things are, his first book was Can't Hurt Me. And number two, the second one was Never Finished. And those were hashtags he uses. And do they not, I know you said you love this guy. He's one of your inspirations. Do those two things just, do they line up so perfectly right now after what you've been through? Number one, Can't Hurt Me. And number two, Never Finished. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, 100%. He's been an inspiration for me for a while now. And especially since I got into this year with USF Juniors, I kind of like saw him on like TikTok a few times and I'm like, oh, like, okay. And then I followed him on Instagram and then I started listening to his podcast and stuff. And it's just some of the things he says to me just really sticks with me. And it's like, I kind of have that mindset. Like, I want to work harder than everybody else. I mean, I need to, you know what I'm saying? But if you want to be great, you have to work like you're the best. You have to do all this. You have to do that. Like, you have to wake up every day wanting it, discipline. You know what I'm saying? So
that's it.
It's really right there.
And you mentioned something, you have to work harder than everybody else. Let's touch on that very briefly. It you know, obviously you're smaller in stature. So there's physicality you have to work over. We already talked about the fact that you're a young woman in a man, you know, a man dominated sport, which we're seeing more young women come in, which is fantastic. I'm a karting guy, as you know, so I love when we see girls racing in national level, regional club level karting, which you do, I know, as well. Has it been that hard in the paddock with the guys in the paddock, or is it just, are you looked at kind of like another driver, but you know that there are things you have to overcome?
So it definitely is a struggle a little bit because people do look down on me.
Okay.
And obviously, for me being 15, I'm still young. I just started working out, like the boxing, the weightlifting, the running, the whatever I do. Ever since November, it has been a struggle. And I remember when I first did F4 last year, it was definitely really physical on my body. And I remember when I did USF 2000 at Portland, I mean, after first race, I did pretty good. And then after that, my body just couldn't hold it anymore.
Mm-hmm, I hear
and
you.
I was like, something needs to change. Like, I can't sit here and do this to myself. So I had to overcome the insecurities I felt with getting bulkier and getting more muscle.
Yeah.
And it's always been a struggle a little bit going throughout karting with being in a male dominated sport. You have to have a different mindset than everybody else.
Yeah.
You have to think that you're just another driver. You're not just a female driver. You're a driver. And you deserve to be there as much as they do, no matter what they say or what they say behind your back.
Yeah, and sometimes you got to give it back to them twice as much as they do, right? Whether it's like a Hannah Greenemeyer or an Ashley Rehara or some 100%. Of the girls out there that are elbows up. And again, like I say this, and I've said it forever, but the car does not know who's driving it. Yes, it doesn't know if you're 16 or 65, man or woman. That's the beauty about motorsports, as long as you can get there physically. Which it 100%. Seems to me like you're on the way. I love the fact that you're so dedicated to this because, listen, every month you work out and get back on the track, you're only going to be better every time you come back. And not everybody can say that.
100%. Yep. It's what I look forward to every day.
All right. So I'm sure you're looking forward to Road America as well. Is that the one kind of race you're looking forward to?
I am, actually. Yeah. I'm going to have a lot of people there that I know and my sponsors, of course. So I really do want to do well that weekend, and I feel like that's kind of the race I prepare for all year.
Yeah.
To really just perform well there. And obviously in juniors last year, I did pretty decent.
Yep.
And I am proud of that, and I want to continue working on that and continue working on what I'm learning right now throughout all the other tracks, like VIR coming up or like the Mid-Ohio Test.
Well, listen, you mentioned sponsors. Let's leverage this platform. Give me your sponsors. Give a chance to give them a shout out here.
So we have Millennium Technologies. They're up in Plymouth, Wisconsin. And then, of course, we have Rumble Boxing, Brookfield, my boxing place that I go to.
Love it.
And then we have some of the team sponsors like Colorado State University or LHP Analytics. So they all do a lot for me and, of course, the team.
We need more people to come on board for Ava. I think that's what we need, right? You up for that?
Exactly. We need more people.
More Ava Dobson supporters. Are you in that?
Yes, I need that.
Hey, listen, Ava, you're a joy. I appreciate it. Thankfully, you're feeling good. I came over to see you after the wreck, and I'm glad you're kind of getting there. Looking forward to seeing you back on the racetrack at VIR, getting a chance to go wheel to wheel again. But listen, I appreciate it. I know you're banged up a bit, but thank you for taking the time to come on the show.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
So as I had said, fantastic interview with Ava Dobson. Man, I just, you listen to it, you could feel it in her voice. You could just understand kind of what she went through at the racetrack, what she's gone through as a female driver in the series and what she's focused on. And yeah, fantastic interview there with Ava. And looking forward to seeing her get even better and better results throughout the 2024 season. Young woman still just getting into car racing for the first time after a number of years in kart racing. So that caps things up for this edition of the podcast, episode 60 of our USF Pro Insider. Looking forward to the next events on the schedule. For drivers and USF juniors, it'll actually be June. They got to wait another month till we head to Virginia International Raceway. We'll be on track alongside USAC and Skip Barber. For all the other drivers in USF 2000 and USF Pro 2000, the wait is not very long. We're on track next week, May 9, 10, 11, the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Indy GP weekend at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Road Course. It's a big one for all the drivers in USF 2000 and USF Pro 2000 because you talk about races you want to win. You want to win one at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, right? So this is going to be a fantastic weekend for sure. Big weekend.
Still not to that turning point yet where I think some of the rookie drivers in the series can kind of really step forward. I always look at kind of the middle of the season, the Road America, Toronto kind of thing, where drivers will start stepping up a little bit. The rookies aren't really rookies anymore, having already run a street race. They'll have run the oval at IRP. They'll have run a track like Indianapolis. So I think once they get through these first three or four events, that's when we start seeing some of the drivers who are maybe a little lower on the experience step up and challenge. Otherwise, yeah, we're looking forward to Indianapolis. We're looking forward to the juniors getting back on track at VIR in mid-June. We hope you guys will join in and watch all the coverage on the USF Pro Championships YouTube channel. If you haven't downloaded the app, do that as well. The USF Pro Championships app, you get live timing, all the live video. You can get The Climb as well, the documentary series, which is running again here in 2024. And of course, all of my podcast content on the app as well. Folks, thank you so much for tuning in. I really appreciate it. You listen to the podcast. Great for these young drivers. Great experience for them to get some interview time, some podcast time. Obviously exposing their program as well. We're trying to get the awareness for the young drivers in this program. Big thank you as well to Leandro Juncos and Ava Dobson who join me on the show. And we'll be back with another one next week. We'll look forward to kind of previewing what's happening at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Thank you so much, folks. Do appreciate it. My name's Rob Howden. Bye for now.